Thanks, Theo. All right, well, I just want to say that I'm really excited to be here and get the opportunity to talk to everyone a little bit more about hearing and how that can impact communication. The green light's on. Is that working now?
You can have to move it closer to your mouth.
How about now? Is that better?
Oh. Okay. Is that better?
No.
No. 1, 2, 3.
It's kind of switching.
Okay, can you hear my voice now?
No.
All right. Yes. I needed to talk a little bit louder. You'd think I'm an audiologist. All right, so I was just saying I'm really happy to be here today and get to talk to everyone. So first, just a little bit about me and my practice. I'm part of Arizona Hearing Specialists. We've been around for 35 years. I've obviously not been with the practice for 35 years, but I've been there 4 years. And really our philosophy is to help our patients hear their best, to also live their best. We have 3 locations, 2 in Tucson and 1 down in Green Valley, and there's our 6 doctors of audiology there. And we also have a fantastic administrative staff, couldn't do it without them. So we provide comprehensive hearing health care. We're not just doing hearing tests and fitting hearing aids, we actually do tinnitus evaluations and treatment. We also work with cochlear implants, so when hearing aids aren't enough, cochlear implants are now an option, and that technology is rapidly developing. And we also have an oral rehabilitation program, and that's really my passion. And then we also have some community involvement with St. Andrew's Children's Clinic, and we're always collecting donations at our offices to take down to the kids. So if you have anything when you're doing some spring cleaning, you can drop it at our offices and we'll make sure it gets to some people in need. We also do student mentoring for students from the U of A as well who are getting their degrees. So a little bit about me. I got married about 1.5 years ago, so that's my husband and I. And I graduated in 2014 from the U of A. I'm also a fellow of the American Academy of Audiology and have my certificate for the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. I'm originally from Lexington, Kentucky, so I don't know if any of you watched the basketball game last night, but I'm very happy this morning. And I also have a communication disorders bachelor from Eastern Kentucky University as well. So first things first. Hearing loss affects the flow of communication, which is the act of exchanging information. We know over 34 million Americans are impacted by hearing loss, but only 1 in 4 actually have hearing aids or some sort of assistive device to help. One thing we also know is that hearing aids don't completely solve the problem. So what causes hearing loss? Maybe some noise exposure, military or recreational activities, some medications and illnesses, age-related factors, genetics, injuries or traumas. And one thing we interestingly know now about diabetic patients is they're twice as likely to have hearing loss as an individual without diabetes. So some signs of hearing loss. So you can kind of look at these and think to yourself, maybe if you've been experiencing these or know someone who's been experiencing these signs. But asking people to repeat, having difficulty following conversations in a group situation, maybe thinking other people are mumbling, difficulty in background noise, women's and children's voices, having trouble with those. If you're maybe turning up the radio or the TV louder than other people might prefer, incorrectly responding to questions, maybe you have some ringing in your ears, or hearing someone talking but maybe not quite understanding what they've said. So you hear their voice but maybe you don't know what they said. Another thing we know is that age does matter. So for individuals who are 45 to 64, It's about 20% of adults who have some hearing loss. The next age group there, 65 to 75, it's about 30%. And then with 75 and over, it's about 50%. So the older we get, the more impacted we can be by hearing loss. So hearing isn't just peripheral, meaning it's not just at the level of our ears. There's central things going on in our brain as well in the auditory cortex. So there's three portions to the ear. There's the outer ear, which is the ear that we can see. Our ear is responsible for collecting the sound waves and then directing it down our ear canal. At the end of the ear canal is our eardrum, and that vibrates. So as I'm talking right now, your ears are all collecting those sound waves and they're getting directed down that ear canal to make that eardrum vibrate. As that eardrum moves, it creates a movement in the bones of the middle ear, and those move in sort of a lever action. There's three tiny little bones in the middle ear space. The stapes, which is the innermost of those bones, actually then presses on our cochlea. Our cochlea is our organ of hearing. And that structure is fluid filled. So when that bone presses on that fluid filled organ, it creates a wave. And that's where the information gets sent up to our auditory nerve and up to the brain so we can hear and understand. So then there's also some cross pathways in the brain as well. Some input from our right ear goes to the right side of the auditory cortex, but also goes over to the left side and vice versa for the left ear. So a long time ago, we used to only fit people with hearing loss with one hearing aid. And then we found out that that wasn't necessarily the best thing, because then the ear that wasn't aided kind of lost some of its word recognition ability. Things became distorted. So we found it's really important to keep that entire system active and working. So the audiogram is basically where we chart your hearing test results. And this is just an audiogram of familiar sounds and different speech sounds. So thinking about communication, if you had some hearing loss, we would just say, maybe if your hearing loss looked something like that yellow line that just popped up, you'd miss things that were above that line on the chart. So there's a lot of speech sounds, and speech sounds are important for communication. So there are some negative effects of hearing loss. You have the reduced audibility of sounds. That's kind of an obvious one. But there's also increased difficulty hearing in complex situations. How many of you have been in a restaurant and have been so frustrated because you can't hear the conversations at the table? Yeah, lots of heads nodding. I have normal hearing and I have that difficulty sometimes. So to a certain extent, sometimes it's just the environment that you're in. But hearing loss obviously makes that more difficult. When you have hearing loss, we naturally have greater reliance on other cues as well. So visual input. So you're using your eyes to actually read lips to an extent and take into account the gestures and facial expressions. And then also your brain is working overtime to use the context cues. The topic of the conversation, your brain can kind of fill in the gaps if you miss things because of your hearing. A newer study that recently came out talks about the risk of dementia with untreated hearing loss. So depending on your degree of hearing loss, you're more at risk for developing dementia if you don't treat that hearing loss. So there's some interesting and complex effects. There's also psychosocial impacts of hearing loss. There's been studies to link irritability, depression, fatigue, avoidance and withdrawal from social situations, reduced job performance and earning power, and then just diminished overall well-being. One quote that I like to bring up when talking about this psychosocial impact is actually a quote from Helen Keller, where she said, "Blindness is what separates us from things. But deafness separates us from people." So your hearing is what keeps you in communication with those around us. So that's an important thing to think about. So what makes it difficult to communicate? If anybody has something they can think of, just go ahead and say it. Any ideas? Well, you mentioned background noise. That can make it difficult, right? Your hearing might make it difficult to communicate. If you have hearing loss, you can't hear as well. So that makes it difficult for you to carry on conversations. Your emotional state. If you're stressed, it actually impacts how well you can focus and listen and thus communicate. Background noise, whether it's a restaurant with lots of people talking and dishes clanking, or maybe it's just at home, you have the water running or your refrigerator's running and the TV is on. All of those background noises can get in the way of communication. A lot of times people don't think about the environment itself. So in a room where it's very large with hard surfaces and high ceilings, that's a poor acoustic environment. And that pretty much describes most restaurants these days. So those environments are poor because there's a lot of reverberation that happens. Whenever we talk, those sound waves are bouncing all around, so it's not as good of a signal. In a room like this where there's carpeting and some acoustic tiles, it's the better environment to communicate. Visual cues, being able to see the person, makes a big difference as well. So a communication breakdown, it occurs whenever communication doesn't happen like we expect it to. Maybe you mishear, misunderstand, or don't hear what someone has said. So maybe someone says something and you don't answer, or maybe you answer incorrectly because what you've heard isn't what they've said. And these breakdowns occur more frequently when we know hearing loss is present. So there are actually different types of communication breakdowns, and knowing the different types can actually help you try to fix those communication breakdowns. So the first one is not understanding. That's when you hear something, but it doesn't make sense. You know that you've heard something incorrectly, because whatever the topic of conversation you're having, whatever word you heard, you know doesn't fit into that. So you're aware that you haven't understood what someone has said. That one's a little easier because you're aware and you can try to fix that and clarify. Misunderstanding or mishearing is a little trickier because this is where you think you've heard, but you haven't heard correctly. So you're unaware that you have heard incorrectly. This one is maybe where someone asks you to do A, B, and C, and then you go do X, Y, and Z, and then they're mad because they want to know what happened to A, B, and C. So that's that, you know, misunderstanding and mishearing can be a tricky one to fix, but we'll discuss a way to fix that one. And then not hearing. So someone says something and you don't hear them. Thus, then you don't get the message. Usually this is a little more evident to the person who is talking to you if you don't respond, but not always. So when a communication breakdown occurs, how does it feel? Maybe you were angry. Makes you feel isolated because then you're not getting to have that communication with people around you, feeling kind of left out. Maybe you're embarrassed because you've answered incorrectly. Someone asked you what the weather was like and you gave them the time. Maybe it's frustrating because you want to be involved in that communication, but you can't because you just can't hear. Or maybe you're just annoyed. Maybe you think everyone else just isn't speaking right and you're annoyed that you can't have those communications. So communication breakdowns really cause the negative emotions to increase and communication to decrease. So our goal is to increase the audibility through technology and through devices, assistive listening devices, but then also to modify habits to help increase communication and decrease those negative emotions associated with communication breakdowns. And what we know is that hearing loss does affect that ease of communication. So how do we improve communication? Well, luckily, we have a tool belt I'm going to go through with you to show you ways that we can further improve communication for the person listening, but also for the person who is speaking. So what is the first thing you might say when you don't understand someone? Huh? Yeah. What? Huh? Pardon me? Could you repeat that? That's what everyone responds with when we don't hear. The problem is it's not specific. It doesn't give any feedback to the person that you're talking to about what you heard or maybe what you didn't hear. So when someone responds to what or huh or pardon me, could you repeat that? They're going to repeat themselves. And sometimes repeating isn't effective because maybe it's something the way they've said it. The words they're using, it's just not coming through clearly for you. So if they say it again in the same way, it's unlikely you're going to hear it that second, third, or fourth time. From the listener's perspective, when people frequently ask you to repeat or when you have to repeat, it can be somewhat frustrating. It also is frustrating to have to be the person to ask people to repeat. I kind of think of this whole thing with repeating as the voicemail effect. If you've ever gotten a voicemail and you couldn't understand it, so you rewind it, you play it again, you still didn't understand it, you rewind it. It doesn't matter how many times you rewind it, it's something about that message. So when we respond with non-specific responses, people are going to repeat, and we want to try and get them to rephrase or say things in a different way to help you hear that second time. So here's a strategy that can actually fix a lot of communication difficulties. It's called the keyword strategy. I'm going to demonstrate a communication without the keyword strategy and then with the keyword strategy to show you the difference. The keyword strategy involves repeating back what you've heard in the form of a question instead of just saying what or huh. So let's say someone says, I'm going to the grocery store, would you like anything to eat? And you hear anything to eat. Maybe you were focused on something else and you missed that first part about the grocery store. So you say, huh? And they say, I'm going to the grocery store. Would you like anything to eat? Because that's the natural response to repeat what we've heard. And then again, you say, huh? So that could go on all day. Eventually, someone's going to get frustrated, right? And that's when those negative emotions go up and then the communication goes down. But let's try it a different way. So let's say someone says, I'm going to the grocery store. Would you like anything to eat? You again hear, anything to eat? But instead you say, what did you say about eating? So now you've communicated that you heard the part about eating and you missed the part about the grocery store. So they're going to respond to your question and usually rephrase what they've said. I'm about to head to the grocery store. Would you like anything? Or do you want anything? So that gives you a better chance of hearing it that second time because they're putting the focus on the part that you missed. And they're also rephrasing it, so that gives you an even better chance than if they were just repeating it. So that helps end that cycle of repeating. It also takes the burden off of the person who maybe didn't understand of having to stop and maybe feel bad about stopping the conversation to say, what? Could you repeat that? It takes the burden really off both parties because it's just a flow, a better flow of communication that way. Another thing I'd like to point out about this strategy, if you had heard incorrectly and you said, what did you say about the doctor's office? They would say, oh, no, I didn't say anything about the doctor's office. So that helps with those times when you maybe mishear things as well. So some strategies for the listener. Asking people to rephrase is more effective than asking people to repeat. Avoid using the non-specific responses and try to use that keyword strategy to get people to rephrase without having to ask. And sometimes you have to be your own advocate. So I recommend if you know that you have a hearing loss, sometimes you need to tell people what they need to do to help you hear. Because people don't always know what to do to help someone who has a hearing loss. Sometimes they'll talk really loudly, which doesn't always help. What you really need is for someone to speak more clearly. And the way to do that is to have someone slow down their speech. So if you tell someone, I have a hearing loss, if you could please face me and speak a little slower, that would really help me. That's a good strategy to use. So some strategies that you can also use for advanced planning. You can change your voicemail. Tell people on your voicemail, I have a hearing loss. If you could repeat important information twice, that can help decrease some frustrations. Asking people to speak clearly or slowly. Controlling your environment. There's ways to do this that we don't always think about. So we've brought up restaurants. So maybe if you can arrive a little bit earlier, when it's not the busiest time, that can help because it'll be a quieter environment. Asking the hostess for a quieter booth or a quieter table can help. If you can sit as far away from most of the noise, often also sitting on the patio can be quieter as well because it's not all the sound trapped in one room. And making sure that you have good lighting to be able to see the person you're talking to so those visual cues can be picked up. So some strategies for the communication partner. Get someone's attention first before just starting to talk. If you get their attention, they're going to be prepared to listen. So simply tapping them or saying their name before you start in on a conversation. If you can inform people of the topic first, that really helps our brain narrow in on a certain set of vocabulary that to expect, which can help reduce those breakdowns in communication. And again, speaking slower, not necessarily louder. Speaking slower and using clear speech can actually improve understanding by up to 20%. So that's a big difference. And this is the most important thing that I will say all day. And if you take nothing else from my talk, I hope that you will try to use this next strategy. It's walk before you talk. So be in the same room and facing your communication partner. I see some elbows. This goes for both parties. It's not just one person walking to the other one all the time. But when you try to communicate between rooms, that's when the communication breakdowns and frustrations usually occur. If you're in the same room, that helps cut down on those. So everyone's going to always walk before they talk. So habits are hard to break, though. So I'm just going to quickly touch on some different styles of communication. And how those may impact how well we communicate. So people with hearing loss typically tend to be passive listeners because you can't hear and maybe you don't always want to have to feel like you're stopping the conversation and asking people to repeat. You tend to maybe sometimes just sit back and smile and nod. And then iced tea shows up and you wanted lemonade. So passive communicators are those who withdraw from the conversations, kind of just go along with things, pretend you've understood. But the bad thing about being a very passive communicator is that your communication needs aren't met. You're not part of that communication and you're left missing out on those interactions with people around you. On the other side of things, there are some people with hearing loss who tend to be aggressive communicators. If they're talking, they don't have to listen, so they don't have to worry about their hearing loss. So that's the person who maybe tends to dominate that conversation. And then if they don't hear you, well, maybe it's your fault because you're mumbling. So they put the blame on others. So that also doesn't get your communication needs met. And it also doesn't create a very positive interaction. Assertive is where we'd like you to be. So that's someone who, if you have a hearing loss, if you're okay admitting it and telling others what they need to do to help get your communication needs met. You use communication strategies, and you really take responsibility and advocate for yourself to make sure you are a part of that conversation and involved so that you're not left missing out on interactions. So this is where I'm going to kind of just go through what you can do next. If we've been talking about hearing loss, and maybe you're thinking, well, maybe I need to check into that. Some of these things I'm identifying with, and I'm thinking I need to get my hearing checked. You can contact our office. There's brochures, and my cards are in the back. You can grab one of those. I also encourage you to check out our online. So we have a website, and I have a lot of reviews from patients on there, which is a really good way to really get an idea of what kind of provider I am. So if you were to come in for an appointment, I take the case history information from you that's relevant to hearing, and then we determine sort of what your listening goals are and what type of listening lifestyle you have, what types of environments you're in. I examine the outer ear and then do a comprehensive evaluation of your hearing in our sound booth. And then we can discuss treatment options or solutions. Sometimes the solution is maybe just going through some of these communication strategies and things that you can do. Or maybe the solution is some sort of device. During the comprehensive evaluation, we do pure tone air conduction, which tells me the softest sounds that you can hear at different pitches. And then we do bone conduction testing, which actually goes directly to the inner ear to tell us what part of the ear may be affected. And that diagnoses the type of hearing loss that you have. We also test speech reception, word recognition, and we do speech and noise testing. And then we also do tympanometry and acoustic reflexes, which is a measure of the middle ear function. So we do provide comprehensive and ongoing care for hearing aids, cochlear implants, and hearing health in general. So we do programming adjustments if you have current hearing aids, clean and check, so it's always good to have your hearing aids checked about every 6 months. And then one important aspect that we do that some other places may not is something called real ear verification. And that's actually measuring what the hearing aids are doing in your ears, because everyone's ears are different, the acoustics are different, and that allows us to better tune them for your specific ear canals and for your hearing aids. We do accept most insurance plans, and we are Medicare providers. You just have to have a referral from your primary care physician for the evaluation if you are with Medicare. And I will leave you with this. Communication is a two-way street. So realize that these strategies and things go both ways. So, and that wraps up my part. Thank you.